This is Corwin Fergus, The Tibetan Book of the Dead, March
29th, 1993. In the winter series, Seasons of Life, this evening Corwin Fergus will be showing us a film, The Tibetan Book of the Dead. In this tape series, we'll only be hearing his words on this subject, as the film will not be recorded, and perhaps the maker of the film will be here this evening and say something about this. But Corwin has written that between the stages of life, we pass through liminal phases where the preceding myth that lent us direction has died or is dying, and a new orientation attitude has not yet emerged. Within these often difficult passages, we begin to form a relationship with our own death and with the unknown. People via art, religion, philosophy, and psychology have attempted to map this elusive territory. One of the most compelling of these imaginings into the unknown is the Tibetan Book of the Dead. Jungian analyst Corwin Fergus will present Bruce Bailey's cinematic meditation on the Tibetan Book of the Dead. Quick Billy is the title.
Makes films with huge crews, working almost always from scripts, whereas experimental films of all kinds have any number of departure points, a vision, a dream, a feeling, a synchronicity, a hypothesis, or just wandering out into the world with a camera and letting the film take form from the nature of the footage. I think the experimental cinema is of interest to Jungians because its relation to myth-making, the myth-making of Hollywood, seems parallel to alchemy's relation to myth and fairy tales. In the experimental cinema, like in alchemy, the individuation process is revealed often much more vividly than in myth and legend, or in filmmaking that is concerned more with mirroring the culture. Perhaps unfortunately, like many of the alchemical treatises, many of the works of the experimental cinema are quite arcane and not so immediately accessible. The film we'll see tonight was based loosely on the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and I'm still not quite sure if I'm using the Tibetan Book of the Dead as an excuse to show this film, or if the film is a prop for talking about the Tibetan Book of the Dead. The Tibetan Book of the Dead is pretty hard to read. I've been intrigued with it for a long time, but I've never got all the way through it until just recently. And one of the first things I came across this time was a description of the bardo experience using the metaphor of film in the introduction by the editor who was writing this in the 1920s. He wrote, "The deceased human being becomes the sole spectator of a marvelous panorama of hallucinatory visions. Each seed of thought in his consciousness karmically revives, and he, unless previously an adept of yoga, like a wonderstruck child watching moving pictures cast upon a screen, looks on unaware of the non-reality of what he sees dawn and set." When I was very immersed in filmmaking, I always used to, or very often used to make the slip between film and dreams, saying dream when I meant film and vice versa. In Buddhism, dreams are often used as a metaphor for the nature of life, the point of meditation practice being to awaken within this dream. In this sense, we are like movie projectors generating the stories of our lives. I once had a dream when I was applying to get into an analytic training program. I didn't feel so good about one of the interviews I had had. I felt the guy had some complex that was getting between us. But in those days, I had a pretty inflated notion about the consciousness of Jungian analysts. So I was tending to reject my perception. Then I dreamt before the second interview that I was at the second interview, and I had to get up from my seat and walk over and turn off his film projector. This same guy later pointed out to me an interesting thing about television and film, which is really so obvious, and I think is why TV is less satisfying or magical than the cinema. And I think it's not really because of the small screen or poor image quality or the lack of the theatrical setting, but it's more that the TV image comes at you as if it's objective, and the film image comes from behind you as if from you, mimicking the way we experience the life dramas we create. From the Buddhist point of view, then, TV tells a lie, perpetuating the trance of an illusory objective reality, while film, as if coming from us, invites us to recognize the illusions as they appear. The Tibetan Book of the Dead is not the original name of this text. It was originally called it is called in its tradition the Bardo Thodol. The text itself explains that this means the great doctrine of liberation by hearing and seeing, or the great deliverance by hearing and seeing on the after-death plane of the Bardo. The word Bardo has two parts, bar, which means in between, and do, which is island, means island or mark. So the Bardo would be a landmark that stands between two things. The text itself was written for the dead to assist in gaining liberation from the samsaric cycle of death and rebirth, and failing that, to choose an auspicious birth. The text, as it is read to the dead person, reminds them that they are dead, interprets what they are experiencing, and encourages them to remember whatever practices and teachings they've had, and continually reminds them to recognize everything they are experiencing as being karmically generated projections of their own psyche, and thereby doing that to gain liberation. But pretty much all the commentaries emphasize the importance of the teaching for the living. A bardo can be any critical life juncture, a separation, a stage of life transition, psychosis, breakdown, serious physical illness, or intentionally induced states such as ceremonial initiation, or through fasting, trance, or drug use. These in-between times are confusing by nature, but they are also pregnant with potential for transformation. Death and rebirth, or release symbolism, is virtually always a characteristic of any deep bardo experience. The basic premise of the teachings of the Tibetan Book of the Dead is essentially the same as in analysis: to go through and into whatever presents itself. The Tibetan Book of the Dead repeats over and over again that whenever you turn away from any manifestation of the psyche, you simply meet it again, usually in a more terrifying form, and that each and every projection is an opportunity for liberation. Every recognition of any experience, not as given but as a manifestation of the psyche, is then a liberation, while every failure to do so generates karma, which leads immediately or eventually to suffering. This is basically half of what the Tibetan Book of the Dead says in many eloquent and colorful ways. The other half is a description of the archetypal structure of the unconscious. Archetypes are, of course, devoid of content and emerge into consciousness as experience renders them visible. So unless your experience is that of the Red Hat School of Tibetan Buddhism, you have to translate the text for yourself. For instance, a Tibetan Buddhist might experience his greed as something like a three-headed blood-drinking deity with a necklace of skulls and six arms brandishing swords, whereas a person from our culture would be more likely to experience greed as some form of the guy next door, or perhaps more archetypally as an earth-devouring corporation. Jung describes the journey through the bardo realms of the Tibetan Book of the Dead as an individuation process in reverse. Actually, Jung's only overtly metaphysical writing, the Seven Sermons to the Dead, has a parallel structure to the Tibetan Book of the Dead, beginning with that which has no qualities and all qualities, what Jung calls pleroma, and what is parallel to the Dharmakaya as named in Buddhism. Both of these notions are equivalent to what Jung means by the archetype as such. The next stage in both the Tibetan Book of the Dead and Jung's Seven Sermons to the Dead is the realm of the gods, or in Jung's psychology, the archetypal images. And finally, man's relation to God, how man incarnates God for Jung, the bardo becoming in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, where awareness chooses a body and enters the world. According to the Tibetan Book of the Dead, in the bardo of the moment of death, the dead experience supreme reality as a clear light. They are instructed to recognize, quote, "thine own consciousness shining void and inseparable from the great body of radiance that hath no birth and no death." Again, to be able to fully enter such a recognition is to be liberated. Failing this, the dead pass to the stage of the secondary clear light, where they are instructed to recognize that they are dead. Remember their practice, the offspring reality of deep meditation, and maintain its direct relationship to the mother reality of the clear light. If one fails again, the dead descends into the second bardo, called the bardo of experiencing reality, where for 7 days one meets the peaceful deities, and for 7 more days their polar manifestations, the wrathful deities. In the text, the energetic and elemental attributes of the deity, along with light and color, are emphasized. And finally, on the 6th, 7th, 13th, and 14th days, the whole pantheon of deities appear. Tibetan Buddhism is the heir of the tantric school of Buddhism. The word tantra means the activity of weaving, thus emphasizing interconnectedness. In the tantric tradition, all aspects of the samsaric realm, the cycle of existence, are doorways that can open to the Dharmakaya, the supreme reality. Any practice, any teacher, any deity, any proclivity, obsession, talent, love, task or fault or wound would be such a doorway. This is similar to the alchemical idea of the prima materia, and like in alchemy, any transcendence is the product of transformation. Again, each cycle or day in the bardo represents a different opportunity to recognize the experience of phenomena as subjectively generated by mind and karma, and to thereby gain liberation. Each day the text begins with something like, no matter how weak your faculties are or how bad your karma is, this time around you will surely recognize your projections. Normally, quite a lot of meditation or dream work or some discipline is necessary to be able to remind oneself, even somewhat consistently, that the way one sees the world is the way one sees the world and not how the world is. The Tibetan Book of the Dead conveys, I think, well, the paradoxical nature of the sheer complexity and simplicity of seeing through the veil of creation. Similarly, there is conveyed the fluid continuum between liberation as the opus and liberation as a moment-to-moment, ever-present possibility for daily awareness. As one falls from the realm of the peaceful deities to the realm of the wrathful deities, the text assures the Bardo initiate that the wrathful deities provide a better opportunity for liberation. This is easy to understand, as the natural tendency is usually to identify with positive or pleasant experiences as being real. If, on the other hand, you have a problem, for instance, being possessed by your anger, and you work in your analysis or wherever to disidentify yourself from these feelings and to know the envy, shaming, or whatever, and all the complexes associated with the anger, then when you meet the anger in the Bardo, this may be your best opportunity for liberation, because you have done so much work with it that there is no mistaking it as other than your own consciousness. You know all its guises and all the places it tries to hide in the world. I'm going to play now a short excerpt from the Tibetan Book of the Dead so that you get a little bit of a flavor for the text. It's from a translation done by Fremantle and Trungpa and read by Richard Gere. This is a translation that actually I just discovered a couple weeks ago. It's much more, I think, accessible than the one with Jung's foreword in it that's edited by Evans. It's from the 14th day of the second Bardo, and I've spared you the descriptions of the first 52 of the 58 blood-drinking deities. So, do you want to start that, Kelly? Bardo of Becoming. The experience of the third Bardo begins with the Lord of Death holding the mirror of karma before the initiate. From the beginning? Experience of the third Bardo begins with the Lord of Death holding the mirror of karma before the initiate. In the third Bardo, there are many memories of the previous life or old personality structure that come to the initiate. The mental body, which had been more of a numinous experience to this point, becomes very painful, like a fish on hot sand, the text says. The dead have persistent visions of couples making love and want to flee between them to gain a body and avoid their suffering. There are many images of being pursued by terrifying beings, which again, if we think of this as an individuation process in reverse, here's a theme that one quite often encounters in the beginning of an analysis in dreams of fleeing. The text here says that if the dead will turn to face the pursuers, they will, quote, vanish like mist in the morning sun. Jung says of work with the personal shadow in the nigredo phase that one needs mostly to have courage. Much of the text for the Bardo of Becoming describes a succession of techniques for closing the womb door and thus avoiding birth. Failing that, then there are instructions concerning how to choose a good womb. The techniques for closing the womb door are mostly meditations of concentration. One, for instance, is to hold the image of a familiar deity and to let it dissolve from the edges inward. Another is to recognize the familiar deity and his consort in visions of couples making love, presumably thereby recognizing the phenomena as typical of all duality. one of the very last opportunities for liberation is to meditate upon just how sick and tired one is of all one's elaborate self-deceptions. The technique for choosing a good womb is to recognize that those seeming to be good are just as likely to be bad and vice versa. Thus, cultivating an attitude that embraces the paradoxical nature of duality and assuring birth on a continent where the Dharma or truth flourishes. Also in the Bardo of becoming is a description of the six lokas or realms one can be born into. Trungpa Rinpoche in his commentary gives an encapsulation of the Bardo experience to preface his discussion of the six lokas or worlds. And I thought I'd read that because it's pretty succinct, I think. He says, first, the tangible quality of physical living logic becomes vague. Then you automatically take refuge in a more functional situation to reassure yourself that your mind is still functioning. In the next stage, the mind is not quite sure whether it is functioning properly or not. Something begins to cease operating. The only way to relate is through emotions. You try to think of someone you love or hate, something very vivid. Even that gradually dissolves. There is a faint experience of openness. You are willing to give in because you cannot struggle anymore. The dualistic struggle of trying to be something is completely confused by the two extreme forces of hope for enlightenment and fear of becoming insane. The two extremes are so concentrated that it allows a certain relaxation. And when you do not struggle anymore, the luminosity presents itself naturally. Then some intelligence begins to connect it to the awakened state of mind, leading to a sudden glimpse of meditative experience or Buddha nature, which could also be called the Dharmakaya. But if we have no means of connecting with the basic intelligence and confused energy still dominates our process of mind, then energy builds up blindly and finally falls down into different levels of diluted energy. Some basic tendency of grasping begins to develop, and from that the experience of the six realms of the worlds develops. The six realms are, very briefly, the hell realm, which is characterized by paranoia and anger, and the realm of the hungry ghosts, characterized by greed, with instant gratification followed immediately by craving, and the simultaneous experience of richness and poverty. The animal realm, which is characterized by ignorance and the absence of humor or irony, with the quality of mechanical routine. The realm of the jealous gods, which is characterized by jealousy, envy, and intrigue, having the quality of an existence consumed in diplomacy. The human realm, which is characterized by passion and intrigue, and is sort of reads like a combination of the realms of the jealous gods and the hungry ghosts. And finally, the realm of the gods, which is characterized by pride and intoxication with ego. I think I'll stop there. Probably have time for a few questions, and then we can take a break, and then we'll watch the film, which is about an hour long. So if anybody would like to pose a question.
Realms, it sounds to me like the six realms are exactly the six realms are.
Yeah, those
manifest life.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
And that all consciousness and manifest life essentially takes place in one of those six realms.
Right. Yeah, it's a little bit like a typology in a way. I mean, it's the person. Driven by whatever karma they have, goes through the bardo experience, doesn't gain liberation, and then is born back into the world.
That seems, in a way, that seems quite a bit different from more the idea of the situation where, you've got some shit to deal with here.
Uh-huh.
There's something included in that in this realm, as opposed to. Am I reading it wrong? Or the Tibetan's basically saying there is no hope here, and the best shot you got is seeing the white light when you take off. Spend a life of meditation, and then when you're gone, you've got a chance to do something. You've got a chance to kind of transform. Am I wrong?
One thing that the Tibetan Book of the Dead says is that in the bardo realm, you have the powers of the mind are magnified 9 times. So there's this idea that in any bardo state, this is your power to gain some kind of liberation. And, again, I think you can look at liberation as, the big opus, and also liberation as meaning just moment-to-moment realization of projections. And every time you realize a projection, that is a liberation, because it takes you from this immersion in illusion in the world and brings your psyche back to you. I think Jung, I mentioned, sees the Tibetan Book of the Dead as an individuation process in reverse. So everything that the descriptions of the 6 lokas, the 6 worlds, and the 3rd bardo are really more like your personal shadow and the shit that you're involved in. And this, I think, corresponds a little bit more with what you often find in mythologies, where you'll have a golden age, and then everything since then has been a degeneration down to where we are as human creatures now.
Well, I guess I'm just wondering why, in a way, there isn't a Tibetan Book of the Living, or maybe there is, and I'm just completely unaware of it.
Well, actually, this guy who's name escapes me right now. Just published a book called The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, I think. And I think in all the... Yeah, right. And I think in all the commentaries, it's The Tibetan Book of the Dead, it speaks very much that... this is a teaching to for the living, really, and that it's in living that we do the work where at the moment of death, then that prepares us for the possibility for liberation. Yeah, go ahead. Well, I'm sure there is, but...
I was wondering if you could see these six realms as the spaces between the chakras. On a loose analogy, they recognize the pieces you can be trapped in.
Yeah, I don't think that so much. I think the 6 worlds are... they're really more, again, like different characteristics of more like a typology of being human. The chakras are more involved with kind of different levels of opening energy, and I think you could make that analogy probably a little closer if you took the chakras and tried to line that up with the different bardos, for instance. Hillman points out, I don't remember where, but that it's sort of false in a way to take sort of different systems that and try to make equations to them, because they're really each their own fundamental set of metaphors. And I mean, you can do that to a certain degree. You can take psychological functions and relate them to the elements, or any other, the four directions or whatever, and to a degree you can do that, and usually it ends up that three of them fit together pretty well, and then you have this sort of dangling fourth one that doesn't make any sense. But,
Do you think that the descriptions of the features that are so
Did people hear that question?
No.
She asked if the descriptions are that specific because people really, and wondered if people really saw them that way. I think what you have to realize is that this comes out of a religious tradition that has a very rich tradition of painting. So it's just like if you go into a psych ward and a very large degree of people who are psychotic are having visions of Jesus. And because that's the dominant image of the self in our culture. And in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, there's this very rich visual art. And so all of these people have been looking at pretty much similar tankas throughout all their lives and have been meditating and really focusing on these tankas. So they've looked thousands and thousands of times at these different images which represent the different aspects of the psyche. And I mean, you know, in the bardo we'll probably see the Marlboro Man and Madonna hitchhiking and you know, the stuff that we've seen thousands of times, you know, and I think our, and by and large for us, I think it'll be probably, you know, our images are probably an inverse proportion of, in poverty to the, our material wealth, but those are their collective images that they've been seeing and seeing and seeing, so that is really what, you know, what comes in, you know, whether that's after death or whether that's in some, you know, very deep bardo state during lifetime. Yeah.
Talking about the Tibetan Book of the Dead and the bardo experience,
too. Tibetan Book of the Dead, I was looking for a manual for my psychedelic experiences. Yeah. I don't know about that. I talked to Bruce Bailey about making this film, and he made it when he was in his late 30s, and he said that it was as if what he was no longer, and what he was becoming hadn't yet come. And he was also very sick with hepatitis at that time, and almost died from that, thought he was dying, and said it... at several points he wondered if he actually had died. And so I don't know if, you know, psychedelic experiences were also a part, you know, were a background to that. I mean, probably more than likely, but I don't know that for sure. I think we should probably take a break now, because otherwise we'll...
child of noble family, from the north, the six yoginis of the north will emerge from within your own brain and appear before you. Vayudevi, wind goddess, blue, wolf-headed, waving a flag in her hand. Nari, woman, red, buffalo-headed, holding a stake in her hand. Varahi, sow, black, with the head of a sow, holding a noose of teeth in her hand. Vajra, red, with the head of a crow, holding a child's skin in her hand. Mahahastini, elephant, dark green, elephant-headed, holding a large corpse in her hand and drinking its blood. And Varuna Devi, water goddess, blue, serpent-headed, holding a noose of snakes in her hand. Do not be afraid of them. If at this time, when the 58 blood-drinking deities emerge from within your own brain and appear before you, you know that whatever appears has arisen out of your own radiant insight, you will immediately become a Buddha inseparable from the blood-drinking deities. O child of noble family, if you do not recognize in this way, you will be afraid of them and escape, and so go on to more suffering. If you do not recognize in this way, you will see all the blood-drinking deities as lords of death, and you will fear them. You will feel terrified and bewildered and faint. Your own projections will turn into demons, and you will wander in samsara. But if you are neither attracted nor afraid, you will not wander in samsara. O child of noble family, the largest body of these peaceful and wrathful deities are like the whole sky. The medium ones are like Mount Meru, and the smallest ones are like 18 of our bodies, one on top of the other. So do not be afraid of them. All phenomena appear as lights and images. By recognizing all these appearances as the natural radiance of your own radiance will merge inseparably with the lights and images, and you will become a Buddha. O child, whatever you see, however terrifying it is, recognize it as your own projection. Recognize it as the luminosity, the natural radiance of your own mind. If you recognize in this way, you will become a Buddha at that very moment. There is no doubt. What is called perfect instantaneous enlightenment will arise on the spot. Remember, O child of noble family, if you do not recognize now and are still afraid, all the peaceful deities will appear in the form of Mahakala, and all the wrathful deities will appear in the form of the Dharma King, the Lord of Death, and you will wander in samsara with all your projections turned into demons. O child of noble family, if you do not recognize your own projections, even though you have practiced Dharma for an eon and are learned in all the sutras and tantras, you will not become a Buddha. But if you recognize your projections, with one secret and one word, you will become a Buddha. If you do not recognize your projections, they will appear in the form of the Dharma King, the Lord of Death, in the bardo of Dharmata, as soon as you are dead. The largest bodies of the Lords of Death fill the whole sky, and the medium ones are like Mount Meru. They will come filling the whole universe. With teeth biting the lower lip, glassy-eyed, their hair tied on top of their heads, with huge bellies and thin necks, holding the records of karma in their hands, shouting, "Strike and kill!" licking up brains, tearing heads from bodies, pulling out internal organs. In this way they will come, filling the whole universe. O child of noble family, when projections appear like this, do not be afraid. You have a mental body of unconscious tendencies, so even if you are killed and cut into pieces, you cannot die. You are really the natural form of emptiness, so there is no need to fear. The lords of death, too, arise out of your own radiant mind. They have no solid substance. Emptiness cannot be harmed by emptiness.
And that is the end of the tape. Copyright CG Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.